So welcome to the current It from Qubit virtual seminar. And today we're very happy to have Ying Zhao from Institute for Advanced Study telling us about a quantum circuit interpretation of evaporating black hole geometry. And let me just remind everybody to please mute your mic when you're not asking a question, but please feel free to interrupt the speaker anytime you do have a question, because it's more fun when it's more interactive. Just remember to unmute and start talking. That's, I think, the best, simplest way to ask a question. So please go ahead, Ying.
Hello, everyone. Thank you very much for letting me speak here. I hope everyone stays healthy and safe in this crazy time. Today, I will talk about a quantum circuit interpretation of evaporating black hole geometry. It's based on a recent work, and it also used some ideas from some work a few years ago. We learn from some earlier work that the bulk geometry reflects the minimal tensor network, minimal quantum circuit preparing the state. I took this picture from this paper of Lenny. The left figure shows a quantum circuit. So there are a bunch of Bell pairs. The black lines represent qubits, and time goes up. As time increases, we apply more and more gates here. The red lines represent gate. So there is a two qubit gate. I mean, each gate couples two qubits. And as time increases, the quantum circuit gets longer. And the insight is if we somehow put this quantum circuit horizontally, then it represents the wormhole geometry. We see that the interior gets longer and longer as the quantum circuit gets longer and longer. So here is this. Here's one particular example of pure state black hole. I mean, as we increase boundary time, as we apply unitary time evolution to the circuit, the states get more complex, and the minimal circuit get longer. The Einstein-Rosen bridge also gets longer. This particular example was called the bridge to nowhere. Also know that in simple situations like this, we can identify the circuit time with boundary time, say, because of the boost symmetry here, the increase of time here. If we call this time, it goes in space-like direction, matches the increase of time here. We can identify the discrete circuit time with the boundary time in this way. D tau is equal to 2 pi over beta dt. The particular way of identification doesn't really matter. Here I draw light-like lines. Here I draw maximal surface. But the point is the increase of time here always matches the increase of time here. In order to give some motivations about the main concepts I need to use in this talk, I will have to make a small digression and talk about something we won't use much in this talk, but I hope it gives you some intuition. We will talk about uncomplexity. Uncomplexity, as the name suggests, it's the opposite of complexity. It characterizes how simple a state is. It quantifies the amount of computational power a state has. Uncomplexity or pure state was defined in this paper. It's given by the maximal complexity minus the complexity of the current state. So it quantifies the computational power. Uncomplexity also has some geometric meaning. As we mentioned before, as the wormhole gets longer, the state gets more complex. Another way to say that is as the wormhole gets longer, uncomplexity decreases. So to some extent, the growth of wormhole consumes uncomplexity. Uncomplexity fueled the expansion of the interior. So here's the discussion on pure state. Once we move to mixed state, we immediately encounter a problem. Let's say we have a density matrix rho. One can apply unitary operators U such that maps rho to U rho U dagger. But not all U can affect the density matrix rho. So we need to first identify those operators that can affect rho. Here's one way to ask the question. We want to know what's the uncomplexity of a mixed state, or we want to know what's the computational power of a mixed state. This density matrix can have different purifications, but we expect that the computational power one has does not depend on the purification. So we just start arbitrary purification. Say Alice has a density matrix rho A, and together with Bob's subsystem B, they are in a pure state psi. We can ask the question this way. How much computational power can Alice get out of state psi when she only has subsystem A? Here's the uncomplexity of mixed state. We discussed it's from paper a few years ago. The definition here is given as the maximal possible complexity this psi can reach by applying UA minus the maximal complexity the state psi can reach by, say, again, applying some operator UA, but we require UA does not change the density matrix rho A. The idea behind this is that we need to exclude those unitaries that do not change the density matrix. So there are a lot of unitary operators. They make the state more complex, but it doesn't change the density matrix. Those unitaries appear in this term. They also appear in this term, and we need to exclude those unitaries. These unitaries are special for our purpose. And what are those unitaries? Here's the claim. If a unitary operator UA does not change the density matrix rho A, then UA can be undone by some unitary operators on B. So basically there exists UB such that UA acting on psi equals UB acting on psi. This is the simplest to see if we start if we write a density matrix in a Schmidt basis. Let's say in a Schmidt basis, there are a couple of eigenvalues lambda 1, couple of eigenvalues lambda 2, couple of eigenvalues lambda k, and also some zero. Pictorially, we represent this by, say, some lines represent lambda 1 and some lines lambda 2. And for those eigenvalue zeros, they are not entangled, so they are not connected. Once the density matrix is written in this form, it should be clear that, so what kind of unitary does not change the density matrix? We need to look for those unitaries UA such that UA commute with rho A. And the matrices commute with rho A are the relative Schmidt basis rotations. What I mean, they have the block diagonal form. There are unitaries on each block, unitaries on this block, this block, this block, and the unitaries here. They commute with rho A, and the claim is this set of operators on A can be undone by B. Why? Because if they are maximally entangled, then it's let's say they share the same eigenvalue lambda, and then it's any unitary here can be undone by another unitary here. So the conclusion of this slide is we need to exclude a family of unitaries, those unitaries that on A that can be undone by B. So here's the end of the digression. The lesson we learn from here is that, say, Alice has a density matrix, and together with Bob, they share a pure state. There are two kinds of operations Alice can apply. The first kinds of operations are those relative Schmidt basis rotations between the two subsystems A and B. This can be undone from side B. They do not belong to either side alone. They only make sense when you have both subsystems, because they do not change the density matrix for either subsystem. And these operations are only meaningful when you have both subsystems. The second kind of operations are those unitary operations, UA, that cannot be undone by from side B. They belong to subsystem A because, I mean, they decrease the uncomplexity of subsystem A. They change the density matrix of subsystem A. There is a relation of this between subregion duality. We mentioned that the tensor network or the circuit match with the boundary geometry. And let's say we have the bulk geometry. Let's say we have a bulk geometry. There is subsystem A, subsystem B. They are entangled. The blue dot represents the RT surface. The orange region is the entanglement region. It is outside the entanglement wedge of subsystem A and also outside the entanglement wedge of subsystem B. We want to claim that the first kind of operations, I mean, those relative Schmidt basis rotations, are responsible for the growth of this orange region. The second kind of operations, that unitary operations on A that cannot be undone from side B, they are responsible for the growth of this red region. We will say that the first kind of gates are stored in the orange region, while the second kind of gates are stored in the red region. We are using using the language in a very flexible. When we say that some gates are stored in some region, what we really mean is that the growth of certain space-time region accompanies the growth of certain parts of the quantum circuit. We will see, if this all looks abstract now, we will see a couple of examples and hopefully it make it more clear. Are there any questions? If there's no questions, let's look at a couple of examples. We already look at a one-sided black hole, pure state black hole. Let's look at a two-sided black hole. Thermal field double at t equals zero. At t equals zero, we can represent thermal field double by S Bell pairs. The corresponding wormhole geometry has minimal length. And in fact, if you look at the geometry, the two entanglement wedge touches here. Now we do time evolution. One can apply unitary operators either from side B or from side A. These gates, these orange dots represent quantum gates. These gates can be undone from either side. They do not belong to subsystem A or B alone. This one, picture B, is the wormhole geometry. We see that the wormhole gets longer, but the part that gets longer is outside A's entanglement wedge, is also outside B's entanglement wedge. So this region only exists when you have both A and B. Similarly, these gates only make sense when you have both subsystem A or B. Are there any questions? We pause a little bit to do some comparison of one-sided and two-sided black holes. When Alice has a two-sided black hole, the interior is outside her entanglement wedge. Alice cannot predict the infalling observer's experience. If she sends in a kitty, she cannot predict if the kitty will meet a flower or a bullet. From a point of view of quantum circuit, the expansion of the interior is fueled by the relative rotations of Schmidt basis, not Alice on complexity. I mean, the quantum circuit gets longer, the wormhole also gets longer, but the gates in the circuit does not change Alice density matrix. So the growth of the wormhole does not consume Alice on complexity. The growth of wormhole has nothing to do with the Alice on density matrix. So Alice can send something into the interior, but she has no control about the interior. On the contrary, if you have a one-sided black hole, when Alice has a one-sided black hole, the interior is in her control. The interior belongs to her, so she can predict the infalling observer's experience. And from a quantum circuit point of view, the expansion of the interior is fueled by Alice on complexity. So as the wormhole gets longer, her own complexity decreases. The expansion of the interior consumes her own uncomplexity. So in this talk, when we say Alice has one-sided black hole, we mean exactly what we just mentioned, that the interior region accessible to her is determined by her subsystem. So she can, in principle, predict the in-volume observer's experience. Because we use the language in such flexible way, the property of a black hole being one-sided or two-sided can be a time-dependent property. We do not mean counting the number of boundaries. In particular, for example, like this, where subsystem A and B are entangled, and here's the RT surface. In case like this, at this time, we would say Alice black hole is effectively one-sided. Why? Because when she jumps in, she directly see her own entanglement wedge, and Bob cannot affect her. Are there any questions?
Yin, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering if there's any clear relation between this uncomplexity for mixed states and the notions of subregion complexity that various people have defined, including.
Yeah, I know you also have worked with Brian Swingle on that, yeah. Right? From various. So when I work on this uncomplexity, my goal is to avoid, because I mean, in your paper, you give a bunch of possible definitions of complexity of a mixed state, right?
Right.
Yeah, so I don't know what to use, so I decide to go around that, try not to use complexity of a mixed state to define uncomplexity of a mixed state.
Uh-huh.
I indeed studied your paper and you give multiple definitions. I hope it's no matter how you define the complexity of states, and if you study the opposite of that, you get the same thing, just because of the simple observation that the computational power should not depend on a purification.
Right. So is there any clear relation between the uncomplexity of a mixed state that you define and any of the complexities of mixed states that we defined or other people defined?
I think some of your definition used the complexity the simplest purification.
Yeah.
And here I actually try to, essentially I use the most complex purification.
Oh.
So I think the physics should be the same, but the number may not match because we use a different purification.
Oh, I see. Okay. But another
so
thing.
I use the most complex purification, complexity of that minus the complexity of, say, some purification, also as complex as possible, but does not change the density matrix.
Right.
So I would expect, say, if you want to say complexity, uncomplexity, some maximal complexity minus complexity, then I expect no matter how you define complexity, you would get the same uncomplexity.
I see. I mean, another thing is that in the bulk, we and various other people discuss possible kinds of bulk duals, which all involve the entanglement wedge and volumes or actions of Wheeler DeWitt patches defined in the entanglement wedge of A.
Yeah.
So it, is what you're doing related to that or is it different?
I indeed gave a interpretation of geometric meaning of uncomplexity. It's the space-time region accessible to an observer, say the future interior region accessible to the observer. But in this talk, I won't use that. And I also won't use the compute the, say, the complexity of or space-time, because for me, the goal here is just to identify there are different kinds of gates and they are stored in different space-time regions. And I want to apply this principle to evaporating black hole. I mean, I don't plan to do complexity calculations in this. But because I identify different kinds of gates are stored in different regions, I think if you want to call that a gates number complexity, then probably it's related.
Okay.
Does that but answer the region, question?
But the region in question is defined by the entanglement wedge.
Yes.
So it sounds very closely related to the regions that people talk about when they talk about subsystem complexity, which also starts from the entanglement wedge.
That's true. That's true. And here I want to say that there is a specific kinds of gates that's stored in this region. I mean, you can count the number of those gates and call that complexity. That's one possible definition.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's look at one more, complicated example. As we mentioned before, with this definition of a black hole being one-sided or two-sided, it can be a time-dependent property. So we look at transition from a two-sided to one-sided black holes. We will look at the example. This is a familiar example of a perturbed thermofield double studied by Shankar at Stanford in this paper. We start from thermofield double and throw in the actual photon from Alice side at time tw. These authors showed that there will be significant back correction on the geometry after scrambling time. Here's the quantum circuit picture. We start from some qubits shared between Alice and Bob, and you can apply operators from either side. You get these orange gates. And these orange gates can be undone from either side. Then an actual photon comes in to Alice's side. It affects more and more qubits, and after scrambling time, it affects the entire system. Notice that these red gates, as they involve this extra qubit, they can no longer be undone by Bob, because Bob does not have access to these extra qubits. Bob can undo these orange gates, but cannot undo these red gates. We compare quantum circuit and black hole geometry. We mentioned that different kinds of gates are stored in different space-time regions. So here's the circuit picture. And correspondingly, we have the black hole geometry. And this, we want to say that there's orange gates. So I mean, in this Penrose diagram, again, this blue dot represents the RT surface. And this orange region is the entanglement region. We want to say that these orange dots are stored in this orange region, and these red dots are stored in this red region. What we mean is, let's say, as we add more of those orange gates, this part of the wormhole will get longer. And as we increase the number of these red gates, this part of the wormhole will get longer, and this part is inside Alice entanglement wedge. In order to do a more detailed comparison, let's look at the epidemic model of the operator growth. We represent the black hole dynamics by a Hayden-Prescott type circuit. Roughly speaking, we have total number of K, capital K qubits. At each time step, we randomly pair them up into K over two pairs. And on each pair, we randomly apply a two qubit operator. So this is a time step one, time step two, three, four. Then at time step one, there is an actual qubit comes in red here. And we imagine this extra qubit is some epidemic. At time one, it affects one other qubit, time two, time three, maybe four, maybe less. As you can imagine, the number of affected qubits will grow exponentially. If we want to count the number of infected qubits, we introduce a concept called size. Size is a time-dependent quantity. At a particular time, it counts the number of infected qubits. In this picture is the red line. So in this time, the size is given by 1, 2, 3, 4, 4. At this time, size is 2. Initially, size is 1. And we want to solve this simple model. So the rate of increase of a size should be proportional to the number of healthy gates, should also be proportional to the number of sick gates. And we can solve, we imply there is initial conditions, then we can solve for size as a function of time. We see that it grows exponentially in time until saturation at time tau equals log k. Earlier, we discussed there are two kinds of gates, the kind of gates that can be undone from both sides and the kind of gates that cannot be undone by valve. In this case, it should be clear that those orange gates can be undone from both sides and the red gates cannot be undone by valve. Notice that at a particular time, the number of the red dots, the number of, at each time step, the number of infected gates is proportional to the number of sick qubits. So up to a factor of two, one can say that the number of gates that cannot be undone, the increase of number of gates cannot be undone at one instant of a time is given by the size of the epidemic. The number of gates that can be undone from both sides is given by the number of healthy qubits. When we look at the black hole geometry, we want to say that some gates are stored in this region and some gates are stored in this red region. So we look at the change of space-time volume of this orange region and the red region. This is some simple calculations in BTZ geometry. We look at the volume of this orange and red region as a function of left time t. We want to compare the circuit picture with the black hole geometry. We first need to identify these two models. The discrete circuit time tau is identified as 2 pi over beta t minus tw, where tw is the time when the perturbation comes in. And the black hole entropy S is identified with k. K is the total number of qubits in the circuit model. And with this identification, here is the result of, say, black hole calculation. This is the volume of the entanglement region, orange region. This is the volume of Alice entanglement wedge, the red region. And these are the, this N can be undone are those, say, orange gates. This N cannot be undone represent number of red gates. So we want to compare this with this, this with this. I made some plot. Here is, I just took log K equals 11. This is just a randomly pick up a number. The blue line here represent an increase of space-time volume in Alice entanglement wedge every thermal time. The pink line represents the increase of number of gates that cannot be undone by Bob, the increased number of gates every discrete circuit time. And here's the ratio of these two. These two plots are the same as before, just with different k. Their log k is 175. We see that other than a small window around scrambling time, these two models have pretty good match. So what we learn here, the lesson we learn here is that the space-time growth, both inside and outside Alice entanglement wedge and the qubit model share the same key features like exponential growth and saturation after scrambling time. The different gates Alice can apply are responsible for the growth of different parts of a space-time. That's why we say the different kinds of gates are stored in different space-time regions. What we did before is simply a comparison of a gates counting from circuit model and the volume calculation. Are there any questions? Matt, I hope this example can make your earlier question more clear. I didn't say define or try to estimate complexity, but if you want to call the number of gates as a one particular definition of complexity, I think it can also be a candidate.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's look at this example from point of view of Bob. We have a quantum circuit here. What we expect about Bob? We expect that Bob can undo these orange gates. But we don't expect Bob can do anything to these red gates. He cannot undo these red gates. So here is the space-time region from a point of view of Bob. Bob sees this part of the interior. let's look at the time dependence of this orange region as a function of Bob's time. Again, this is some calculation in BTZ geometry. One thing I want to draw your attention is this, is roughly speaking, the rate of change of this orange region as we increase time this way, as we slide this region in this direction. The rate is given by S minus the size of this precursor. S is the number, total number of lines here. The size of the precursor is the number of red lines here. S minus the size of precursors are the number of healthy lines. That means the rate of change of a volume as we slide it in this direction is proportional to the number of healthy lines here. Roughly speaking, this part of a geometry, these healthy gates, matches this orange region. If we, let's say, time increase this way and time increase this way. If we start from minus TW and we go back for scrambling time, then as we change Bob's time, the volume of this yellow region no longer changes. On this circuit, that means we hit a boundary here. Bob cannot see these red gates. So once his time is here, then he further change his time. He basically, the volume of this orange region he sees is zero. He doesn't see anything. We see that from point of view Bob is, again, he has access to this orange gates, but not the red gates. He can only undo the orange gates. Let's look at another example, SYK and JT gravity. Let's say we have a low temperature state of SYK, which is represented by a, say, near extremal charged black hole. And Alice apply operators, precursor psi 1 of t is given by u psi 1 u dagger. The size of such an operator was worked out by Qi and Stryker in this paper. Roughly speaking, during the first thermal time, it grows quadratic in time, then it grows exponential in time before scrambling time. From the size, we can estimate its complexity. Roughly speaking, they have the same time dependence. The reason is the relation between the growth of this operator is a tree. And when you have a tree, the number of leaves at the last layer roughly matches the total number of leaves. And the complexity counts the total number of leaves. The size counts the number of leaves at the last layers. That's why they have the same time dependence. Let's compare this with geometry. Here is the RT surface. We want to look at how Alice entanglement wedge grows after I throw in this perturbation. So here's the RT surface. This is the perturbation. I just look at the geodesic distance of this blue line, and this is the result. We see that before scrambling time, these two basically have the same match. And after scrambling time, one expects size saturate complexity start to grow linear in time. And similar things holds here. And after scrambling time, they start to grow linearly in time. So we see that in this particular model, the growth of Alice entanglement wedge, again, is due to those computations involving psi 1 of t. So we want to say that any gates involving this extra qubit are stored in this region in Alice entanglement wedge. A quick summary here. Here's the lesson we learned so far from all these examples. Different gates are stored in different space-time regions. The entanglement region, this entanglement region, it only exists when you have both subsystem A and B. They store the relative Schmidt basis rotations. I mean, these relative Schmidt basis rotations only make sense when you have both subsystem A and B. And the Alice, the entanglement wedge, this red region, it stores the operations that can be undone by Alice, but cannot be undone by Bob. Are there any questions so far before we move on to evaporating black hole? Okay, evaporating black hole. Last year, there was significant progress towards understanding evaporating black hole. There were two beautiful papers coming around the same time. And what these authors did is that they find after page time, there is a new RT surface such that most of the interior belongs to the entanglement wedge of the radiation. And here, I want to study this geometry from the point of view of a quantum circuit. In particular, here are the two questions I want to answer. First, why is it that adding a few more qubits to the radiation gives rise to a big jump in the size of the region contained in its entanglement wedge? Second is, we know that the black hole, the remaining black hole does computation and the radiation doesn't do any computation. But how come the bulk region belonging to the radiation keeps growing after page time, even though the radiation
Ying?
Hello?
When you say the radiation doesn't do any computation, you mean because it's free streaming?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and why it doesn't do any computation, thank you, and why it doesn't do any computation, but still the bulk region belonging to the radiation keeps growing?
Yeah, thank you.
What I mean is, one thing to see this is if you want to estimate the complexity of the pure state radiation plus the black hole system, the geometry is basically it's reflected in the growth of the black hole interior geometry. I mean, it's growing at the end of a black hole horizon, and there all the computations are done by the black hole. Let's start from around page time. Around page time, the black hole is maximally entangled with the radiation. There is a circuit connecting them. Here, I mean, this end represents a black hole. This is the radiation. And there we have some initial state, non-initial state. And all these orange lines represent two qubit gates. Because the black hole is maximally entangled with the radiation, then the gates can be undone from both sides. I also draw the picture this way just to simplify. Yeah, just to make the picture simpler. There should be a Python's launch in the middle, which I didn't draw here, because later I will mostly focus on this end of a circuit. One property is that the evaporation is slow. Because the evaporation is slow, say if we only look at a short time window, for example, scrambling time, then the change of the width of the circuit is small. So when you only look at a small time window, the locally this circuit just looks like locally this circuit. And later we'll just focus on small time window here. So this is around page time, two-sided black hole. And also, just to simplify later discussion, we will say that Alice has the radiation while Bob has the remaining black hole. We know that the remaining, I think I should say this is assumption. It's assumption that the assumption of a quantum circuit model. The remaining black hole is maximally entangled with the radiation. This implies Bob's computation. Bob controls the remaining black hole. Bob's computation can be undone by Alice. So this implies Bob doesn't have his own computations. I mean, he can keep doing computations, but his density matrix doesn't change. So he has a two-sided black hole. What I mean is that there is a two-sided black hole and he holds one side of it. He has some interior. This also implies Bob shares interior with Alice. He doesn't have his own interior because we want to say that the number, the kind of gates that cannot be undone by Alice are stored in his own interior. But here we know that all his computations can be undone by Alice. This will imply that he doesn't have his own interior. What this tells us about evaporating black hole geometry This would imply the RT surface lies at the horizon. Why? Because the RT surface lies at the horizon, then Bob doesn't have his own interior. Notice that actually from the two papers last year, the authors find that the RT surface is very close to the horizon, but it's slightly in the inside the horizon. Here, in a very crude estimation in a quantum circuit model, we made assumption that the remaining black hole is maximally entangled with the radiation. This assumption cannot be exactly true, but at a very, say, crude level, one can see that just from the quantum circuit estimation, the RT surface needs to be close to the horizon. Let's see how the island appear. So we start from, let's say, at the page time. At page time, there is a quantum circuit connecting the radiation and the black hole. All gates are orange. All gates have the color orange, and because it can be undone from either the radiation or the black hole. And Bob has a black hole. Then let's say at one time step, one thermal time, Bob gives C qubits to Alice. The black hole gives C qubits to radiation, where C is the central charge of the field theory. Let's try to see what these C qubits do in this circuit. The circuit is stored in the
What is the total entropy and how does it compare with C?
Much larger than C.
Okay, so you're talking about a very large black hole. And
C is the number of, I'm talking about slow evaporation. C is the number of qubits evaporated every thermal time.
C is the number, I thought C is, isn't C the entropy of the black hole?
Oh, sorry, C is not the entropy. S is the entropy. C is the number of qubits. C is the central charge of the field theory. It's the number of qubits.
It's the central charge of which field theory? The bulk field theory?
Yeah, the bulk field responsible for the radiation.
The bulk theory.
Yeah, C is much. I see what you mean. C is not.
Okay,
thank you.
Be careful.
I need to clarify. C is not a central charge of the dual CFT. Because there needs to be a bulk field theory in order for the radiation to happen. The central charge of.
It's a number of species in the radiation.
Yes.
Thank you.
C characterizes the rate of evaporation.
Got it.
So C is the number of qubits evaporated per thermal time. Let's say in one time step, thermal time, Alice gives C qubits to Bob. The black hole gives C qubits to the radiation. There is a circuit stored in the interior. Let's see what the C qubits do in the circuit. Let's trace what the C qubits do. We read this circuit from right to the left. These C qubits will affect more and more qubits. Eventually, after scrambling time, any gates to the left turn red. And because we say that the circuit at this time does scrambling, so the scrambling time here is beta over 2 pi log S over C, where S is the current black hole entropy. This S is time dependent, it's current black hole entropy. And this C is the, as we discussed, controls the rate of evaporation, is the number of species in Hawking radiation. And all these red gates can now be undone by Bob. Now they belong to Alice. Here, I just draw another picture just to make connection with the earlier discussions. We start from a circuit connecting the radiation and Bob. There should be some Python slant here in the middle. I just didn't draw. And the black hole gives C qubits to the radiation. Then it's like the radiation gets a new line which is not shared with the black hole. And as time goes in this, if we read a circuit in this way, and if we let the time increase in this direction, this extra qubits affect more and more gates, and eventually all these gates turn red. We see that Alice gets her own gates, even though the computations were all done by Bob. And the red gates form the island. The red gates are what we call the island. It's the essentially we see that from this point of view, from point of view of this discussion, it's essentially the interior of Alice one-sided black hole. Let's compare with black hole geometry. The circuit stored in the interior takes scrambling time, this beta over 2 pi log s over c, to scramble the c qubits. This would imply that gates applied scrambling time earlier can no longer be undone by Bob. This gives the following implication of this location of RT surface. It implies that this RT surface is scrambling time behind. Let's say this is my current time. And at this time, Bob gives C qubit to Alice. And if we go back for scrambling time, all these gates turn red and they can no longer be undone by Bob. And the scrambling time, as we mentioned earlier, the circuit, there is a match between the circuit time and the boundary time. So the scrambling time here corresponds to scrambling time in the boundary. Here's my last slide, is about the growth of the island. We answered the first question that how does the radiation get access to this entire big portion of the interior? Next, I want to answer the question that how does the island grow even though the radiation isn't doing any computations? This picture isn't very good, but I hope I can explain. It's just after page time, let's see what happens every single time step, every thermal time. Every thermal time, Bob is doing computation. So Bob applies roughly S gates, S or S over 2. Bob applies S gates, and it's lie on this end of a circuit. And every time step, he also gives C qubits to Alice. So this line, he gives C qubits to Alice. The loss of C qubits has little effect on the S gates just applied. In fact, the loss of C qubits, because C is much less than S, the log of C qubits has little effect to, say, the layer before. The loss of C qubits only becomes significant when you go back for scrambling time. What happens is that if you go back for scrambling time, there is one layer of circuit, which again is roughly S gates. They turn from orange to red. So Bob has a two-sided black hole and he does computation. The interior of this two-sided black hole grows at this end of the circuit because every thermal step, Bob is laying more gates here. But the transition of two-sided to one-sided black hole is also constantly happening here because at each time step, Bob gives some qubit to Alice. So some of these gates will go from being orange to being red. They start from being the interior of a two-sided black hole. Now they become part of Alice's interior. So this transition constantly happens. That's how the island grows. We see that essentially the island grows as a result of this constant transitions from two-sided to one-sided black hole. The mechanism essentially is very similar to, say, from what happens in the familiar example of a perturbed thermal field double we studied before. The only difference is that it's in this case, what does the scrambling is the circuit stored in the interior. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Ying. So we can now open it up to questions.
Ying?
Yeah.
Is it correct that the thing that's called the island is the same as the thing that we call the Python's lunch?
I would say yes. The island start from, so Python's lunch has a two thin part and a bulge, right?
Yeah.
The island start from the smaller one of the thin part. So let me draw it.
Yeah.
This is the Python's lunch, right?
I can't see anything.
Huh?
All I see is thank you.
Oh, yeah. This is a Python's lunch. So it has a neck here.
I still don't see it.
Lenny, you can switch your view so that you're seeing Ying instead of seeing her slide.
How do I do that?
Maybe I can stop share.
Hold on.
Yeah, that works too.
Yeah, okay. Now you disappeared again.
No, I do not see myself.
I don't see you either. But I saw you for an instant.
Did that help or just for me?
Yeah. No, I understand. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Can you see it?
Yes.
So there is a neck here and a neck here.
Yeah.
And there's a bulge. This neck is a smaller neck.
Yeah.
What's the island? Island is this part.
The island is the part between the two minima?
No, the island is starting from this smaller part all the way here.
All the way?
Yeah.
Okay, but then that means it includes the radiation?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it's a matter of language. It's the part of black hole interior. Does it include the radiation? I would say exclude the radiation. Yeah, exclude the radiation.
It's not the region between the two entanglement minima,
I just feel like this minimal here doesn't play a too important role in this discussion.
Okay.
Uh-huh. It's anything here. Mm-hmm. How about this? Anything here that has a classical geometry is what we call the island.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't know how to talk about this radiation if it's just some lines. Yeah.
No, that's clear.
So in some more recent cases, people have studied the island actually extends outside the horizon, right?
Yes.
But in your...
Outside the horizon of a black hole.
Yes.
Yeah.
So in my discussion, I also look at that example. In my discussion, I am using a very crude circuit analysis. In my discussion, basically, the circuit analysis would imply that the RT surface is right at the horizon. Why? Mm-hmm. Because the circuit analysis made the assumption that the black hole, the remaining black hole, is in a maximally mixed state. Right. In reality, that's not true. So that's why, depending on different cases, the island can be slightly inside or slightly outside the horizon. But here, the point I want to make is a crude circuit analysis already implies that the RT surface needs to be very close to the horizon if the approximation of a maximally mixed state is a good approximation.
Yeah, I thought I understood why it's slightly inside, but now you tell me it could be also slightly outside?
That's a different scenario. It's a recent paper by Wang Ahmed and Raghu. It's an eternally.
Oh.
They are eternally coupled.
Mm.
It's just imagine you have a Schwarzschild black hole, and you consider the entanglement of the union of these two regions at later time, the island is. Extends outside the horizon.
Got it. Good, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, if not, then let's, I guess I'll unmute our mics and thank Ying for a lovely talk.
Thank you.